This morning you won't see the scripture itself on the screen. It was something that troubled Noah, who was our video guy back there, saying, "I can't find the slides." And I said, "Well, that's okay, because I didn't give them to you." It is a long, long story, a good story, but it's really hard to hear somebody read to you for so many verses. So I'm going to try to tell you the story and be as faithful to it as I can. If you want to actually refer to it, there are the scripture reference there, and you can find it for yourself in your smartphone, the church app, the Bible in front of you, the one you carried in. But this is the story that I want to share this morning, so let me offer it as best I can. Still fairly early on in Jesus' ministry, he was becoming much more popular and finding an increasing following. More were coming to hear the message and were believing and were being baptized. So many so that it got the attention of the Pharisees. And it wasn't in a good way. They began to feel the pressure around, and they were concerned for his growing ministry becoming more popular even than John the Baptist. So Jesus decided to move his ministry focus, for a while at least, from Jerusalem out into Galilee. So they began to move toward Galilee. Now, every good, self-respecting Jew would take the long way around Galilee, even as a very long way around to Galilee, a long way around Samaria. They would not go through Samaria. But Jesus, not wanting to waste that time, went through Samaria. Now, why wouldn't they go through Samaria? Well, the Jews looked down their noses so drastically at the Samaritans. They'd have nothing to do with them. They wouldn't acknowledge their presence, let alone interact with them. They wanted to stay away, to be kept clean against the unclean. Where'd that come from? Well, when God brought the people of Israel out of Egypt and into the Promised Land, he was adamant they would remain pure in their lineage. They would marry within the tribes of Israel and not with the other tribes they were meeting in the new land they were coming to. So the Jews were those who were faithful and married within the tribes of Israel. The Samaritans were Jews who married into other tribes. And so their lineage was not pure anymore. And so they were looked down upon as being inferior. But I think even more than that was the fact that over the years of their history, Israel was overrun at least three times by conquering nations who came in and pillaged the entire nation and took away with them not only their riches, but their human riches, taking the brightest and the best with them into their own nations, leaving Israel with a vacuum. The last of which was the exile into Babylon. And as they were all taken out of Israel, that left all these homes empty. Samaritans, those who had married outside of their own Hebrew tribes, were living in the hills because the Jews would not accept them down in the developed areas. When those were emptied out in the exile, the Samaritans came down from the hills and lived in their homes. For generations, they lived in their homes. Until finally, the Israelites were freed from exile from Babylon and came back to their land, their homeland, and came back to their properties, only to find there was somebody else living there, taking their family property and their other assets. And so they had a deep-seated hatred for the Samaritans. All that put together made the case that the Jews, a good self-respecting Jew, would go a long way around to avoid Samaria. Well, Jesus, not that he wasn't a good self-respecting Jew, didn't want to waste his time, so he went through. And going through Samaria to get to Galilee, he came, about midday, they came to a small village called Sychar, and that village had grown up around, just nearby, an ancient well that was important to Israel's history. It was Jacob's well. And it figures clearly in the Old Testament readings. They got there to the well, and Jesus, being a bit tired from the morning's journey and thirsty, decided he would stay at the well, and he sent his disciples into town for supplies, for food. And he was there by himself at the well, just taking a breath and being quiet. And then he saw somebody coming down the walking path carrying a large clay pot for water, to gather water for family and go back. She came closer and he saw that it was a woman. And of course, living in Sychar, she was a Samaritan woman. As she came to the well, Jesus asked her, "Would you give me a drink of water, please?" Now, the asking of a question like that wouldn't be so bad. I mean, hospitality was a big thing in their culture, but for him to ask her that question really shocked her. Because she knew he was Jew, by the way he was dressed. He was a Jewish male, and Jewish males didn't interact with women in public, alone especially. And here he was asking her for water, and she said the very thing. "What are you doing to ask me for water to drink?" He said, "Well, if you knew who it was that was asking you, you'd ask me to give you water to drink. A water that wells up, against which you'll never be thirsty again." They talk a little bit back and forth, and she wants that water. I mean, she's not dumb. "Why do I want to carry this pot every day to come back here to get water? If I can have the water you're giving me, I'll never be thirsty again. Give me some of that water." He says, "All right, but first go and get your husband and bring him with you." She says to him, "I don't have a husband." He says, "You're right. You're honest. You don't have a husband. You've had 5 husbands. The man you're living with now is not your husband. So thank you for your honesty." And that kind of set her back on her heels. And she says, "I can tell you're a prophet. You know things about me that nobody would have told you." And then she turns to the side of religion, thinking about prophets. "We worship in the mountains. You worship in Jerusalem. Say it must be there." And Jesus says, "Don't worry about practice. Worship is not about practice and where and how and when. It's about the Spirit." It says the day is coming, and actually now is, that when a true worshiper will worship God in spirit and in truth, for that's who God is seeking. And she says, "I know that the Messiah will one day come." Remember, they have a shared history, the Jewish ancestry. He'll explain all these things to us. And he says to her, "Woman, I am he." At that point, the conversation is interrupted. The disciples come back. And, you know, it's almost like some people have a knack for stepping on the moment. The disciples come back from their trip to town, and they see him talking to a woman. That wasn't comfortable for them. And a Samaritan, that was also a no-no for them. They were good Jews. But they didn't say anything. After all, he was the boss, and he was doing it. They weren't going to step into something they didn't know. But as she sees him coming, she puts her pot down, and she goes home to tell her husband to bring him back and to tell all the others in her circle of friends about this. In the meantime, the disciples are saying, "Look, Master, are you hungry? You need to eat. I have food you don't know about. It's the dude that finished the work of my Father who sent me." Of course, they, like many of us, don't get past the first layer. "Did somebody bring him a lamb sandwich?" I was talking about this the other day, and I said a ham sandwich. I realized that wouldn't work because the Jews wouldn't eat pork. "Says, my food is to complete the work the Father has sent me to do." He says, "You look around, you say that it's 4 months until harvest time." I guess in Hamilton County it might be 5 months with the water being so bad and delaying the planting. "But I'm telling you, look around you. The fields are ripe and ready for harvest." Saying, "The woman I just talked to was one of those who was ready to be harvested for the kingdom." Now, she had gone to see her family and friends and tell them about Jesus. "I met a man who knew everything about me. Could it be he's the Messiah?" They listened to her report, and some of them just believed just like that upon her testimony. Others came and wanted to hear him talk more, and they invited him to stay longer. He stayed for 2 more days and told God's story to them. And a whole town was transformed. They said to the woman, some of us believe because of what you said. Others of us now believe because of what we've heard. And it changed their lives as a community. Now, there's so much in this story, in these 42 verses, that we could make a series out of this and go with all kinds of directions, but I want us to focus on simply this interaction between Jesus and the woman at the well, the conversation they had and what came out of it. So look at these two in their conversations, Jesus and the woman. They had nothing in common. They had different genealogies, ethnic backgrounds. As I mentioned, Jew versus Samaritan, they had different religious practices and beliefs, worshiping in the mountains, worshiping in the temple in Jerusalem. They had different lifestyles and values. Jesus spent his life living into the crowds. This woman came to the well at noon, the heat of the day, to avoid the crowds. And many of you may understand why, but just in case you've never heard the story before, through her conversation with Jesus about having had five husbands and now living with a common law husband, it's inferred clearly that she had a life hard lived, made poor choices, and was the person in their town, or one of them at least, who was the object of the town gossip. They still accepted her, but she was the one. You know, every group has to have somebody just a little lower than they are to sort of, you know, well, they're okay, but, well, not every group. The groups you're in don't do that, I'm sure, but she came at noon because the well was the place to be early in the morning or even late at night so you could avoid the heat of the day. It became for them this social center, almost like their Facebook, where they would share ideas and they would tell stories and they would give the latest gossip. The trouble is, when she would go with them in the mornings, she could tell that latest gossip was aimed at her. She saw their disapproving stares, and she could hear their clucking tongues, and she overheard some of their condemnation. And you can only take so much of that before you don't want to do it anymore, and so she stopped coming in the morning when it was cool, and the task would have been easier to come and get noon when nobody else in their right mind would do that because it was so hot, all to avoid that condemnation. So they had different lifestyles. Jesus was one who sought out people in the crowds. She was one who tried to avoid, to save herself from the criticism and judgment. But Jesus, in spite of their differences and nothing being in common, Jesus found something they could relate to together. A commonality, they were thirsty. They both came for water. He was there for a drink. He didn't have a bucket or a cup or a ladle. She came for water for her family. And so that's what he capitalized on. He invited her into his life. At one common point, I'm thirsty. Would you give me a drink, please? Their conversation focused around what they had in common, thirst, but not just physical thirst as we see it perceived. It was often said by professors in seminaries that this interaction between Jesus and the woman at the well is an instruction manual for how to do evangelism. I mean, finding this common ground, having this rapport established, and then moving in that to deeper conversation. And Jesus started out fine. He had done all that, the commonality, but he pretty quickly went into some dangerous territory. At least that's how we would see it in our hyper awareness of being politically correct and the things you don't talk about in today's culture. And she moved the conversation to religion. I see you're a prophet. We worship in the mountains. You worship down in Jerusalem. And we all know you just don't discuss religion. You know, that was taught to me when I was very little. You don't talk about two things, religion and, well, we've forgotten that one, haven't we? So Jesus did something that would be seen today as being inappropriate. And then he went further. He began nosing around into her personal life. Your husband, you've had five husbands, and this guy's not that. Did he do it to to judge her and put her in her place? Obviously, that isn't the case. That's not why he was doing that. He was doing it to be able to acknowledge who she was, to tell her he knew that she existed and what her experience was, and to accept her at that point in her brokenness, having lived and loved in a difficult way or unwise way in her life. And accept her as she was. And then to begin knocking on doors in her life to see if she might open up those places that were the root of her self-loathing. You know, if I hear often enough that I'm stupid, that I'm not worth anything, that I can't do anything, eventually I start to begin to believe that myself. She had heard that often enough in her life about the things in her life that became a part of who she was. He was sort of knocking on the door to see if she might open it and let him in deeper with that. And so he asked these risky questions, these inappropriate things. She was amazed by the way that he talked about religion and worship, valuing worship over the rules. She was amazed at how much he knew about her life. So she went home and told her family and friends, could this be the Messiah? And they were amazed and came back to listen to him, enough so they asked him to stay, and he stayed 2 more days telling them about God and God's kingdom. In the process, the entire town was healed and transformed. It was interesting that our responses to moments in our lives can be so very different. 2 weeks ago, we talked about Jesus going across the lake, the Sea of Galilee, and landing in an area of the Gerasenes, and there was a wild man, a man who was living among the tombs and couldn't be calmed, couldn't be controlled, couldn't be bound. And Jesus encountered him. He came up to Jesus, actually, and Jesus healed this man, casting out demons. And the townsfolks came to see what had happened, seeing this wild man sitting at Jesus' feet. Their response to that moment, seeing what had happened, was to be frightened and angry and chasing Jesus away. He left, and they were left with simply a story of a once wild man and some drowned pigs. Their lives didn't change. Now, today's story, an encounter with Jesus, a different story, but they had the same opportunity for response. They hear what Jesus has done as a woman tells them the story, one of their own, and they come to listen and see, and when they have a chance to hear, they respond differently. They ask him not to leave, but to stay. And the whole town was transformed. I can imagine, and I have no basis for any of this. Now that I do, but this is taking it out of the time of conjecture. I don't know if I should stand in a certain spot so you know I'm not preaching, but I'm imagining. I can imagine at some point in the future after that happened, they had a family reunion, and the whole family that was a part of this extended family where this woman was gathered telling their stories about life and about, you know, grandparents and great uncle so-and-so and the things you do around family reunions, you know. Sitting around a fire, and at some point the story comes, talk about, remember that day that Grandma met Jesus? And how he changed our family forever. Lives were changed, and with them families were changed, and with them a whole town was changed in their response to Jesus being in their presence. Sometimes we think about things, we're not sure whether they happen intentionally. Do you think that it was just a coincidence that Jesus was at that particular well, that particular day, when that particular woman came? I mean, people get thirsty every day, and wells are centering places, gathering places for those who are thirsty. You think it was a coincidence? I'm not sure that it was. I mean, Jesus, after all, always seemed to have a purpose or a destination in mind. He was always on his way somewhere. But even if it was a coincidence, let's call it that for a moment. Jesus was always looking for opportunities to connect with other people and to share God's story. There are many times we think things are purely coincidental when they seem to happen together with no connecting point at all. There's a story in the Bible that you might think was coincidence. I think one of the characters believed it was. When Jesus told the story about the prodigal son. You recall that a man with two sons, one doesn't like to farm, takes his inheritance and leaves and wastes his share of the family's inheritance, finally comes back destitute, hungry, and ashamed. As he makes his last turn down the lane to the farm, the father sees him, jumps off the porch and runs to him, smothers him in his arms, takes him into the house and tells the servant to clean him up. Give him the right clothes to wear and the signet ring and the best sandals in the house. Make him presentable and welcome him to get settled back home. Now, I don't know that this happened in this story. Here's what I imagine. I'll go back over here to my imagination point. I can imagine as the young man was being cleaned up with the help of the servant, he was speaking maybe almost to himself and saying, man, wasn't it a great coincidence that Dad just happened to be on the porch when I came in and he ran to meet me so I didn't have to beg and grovel. And then while I'm imagining that, let me imagine this, that the servant would have said to him in return, that wasn't a coincidence. Your father's been sitting on that porch in the evening, staring down that road until he falls asleep every single night since the day you left, waiting to see you come home. And if that truly did happen, now I'm off of my imagination point, I believe this is surely this story of the woman at the well, Jesus being there was not coincidence. He was seeking her, knowing her need, listening and hearing her need, accepting her as she was, and inviting her to be healed, to experience so much more. She came in isolation and loneliness, thirsty for somebody to acknowledge her and accept her. She came with the scars and marks of wounds, some old, some fresh. Jesus met her there and offered her new life, new hope, healing, all because he was waiting by the well. Well, what about us? What about you? Is there anything within you that resonates with the Samaritan woman? I'm not talking about your marital status or your marital history. But do you find yourself sometimes preferring isolation, even loneliness, over the risk of being around people who you think will continue to criticize and judge? Have you ever crossed the street to avoid somebody, not because you didn't like them, but because you knew they didn't like you? And you'd had enough of the drama. Have you ever found yourself experiencing something that this woman at the well must have experienced? Maybe it was about your relationship. Maybe it was about your parenting skills and experience. Maybe it was about something else in your life, your work experience or poor choices. What are you looking for that will quench your thirst? Where do you go to find it? And what have you tried only to find out that you get thirsty again pretty quickly? Jesus is still waiting by the well for you and for me today. Many of us have been to the well before with him, and we know what it's like. Others of us have been there and for some reason stopped coming to the well as often. Others of us still have never made it there at all. But he's waiting by the well still for us. To meet us at our point of thirst. To stay with us until we understand that it's not just about well water, but about living water that he wants to give us. And when we understand that, and we drink his water in recognizing who he is, she says, I believe the Messiah will come and explain everything to us. I am he. We recognize him just as she did. We'll have our own story to tell. Imagination spot. Can you imagine one day in a family reunion when they talk about things, they say, you remember when, and they name your name, met Jesus at the well? How he changed his or her life, and how his or her life touched mine and changed me. You see, everybody we know is thirsty. Everybody we know needs. Our friends, our family, our co-workers, our neighbors, we're all looking for that which will truly fill the empty places in our lives and water our personal droughts. If you'll accept his living water, you can bring your friends to drink too. Because he's still waiting by the well for you. Amen.